And we're holding on page Mem Dalid in Sanhedrin, a little bit past the middle of the page, middle of Ois Kuf Gimel. We were learning yesterday about various things involving Avodah Zarah. We talked about the little pocket size of Avodah Zarah that the Jews had. We talked about the way that the priests of Avodah Zarah would, nowadays we have our pocket size phones, yeah, it's true. We talked about the psychological tactics that the priests of Avodah Zarah would use to get people into it. So now continuing on that topic. So the Pasuk tells us in Malachim that after the Aseret HaShevatim were taken into Golus, then Sancheirah brought people from a number of cities in Bavel and Asher and whatnot and used them to repopulate Eretz Yisrael. They became the ancestor. One of the places they came from is called Kusa, and therefore the people as a whole were called Kusim. These are the famous Kusim, the infamous Kusim that we have throughout Shas and in other places. So now the Pasuk describes, originally they're Oved Avodah Zarah, like all the other Goyim in the world. They come there, they start getting attacked by lions. They say, wait a minute, the god of this land apparently doesn't like the fact that we're not observing his laws. There was a notion in those days, the Goyim had a notion that every land has its own god. Actually, once read, somebody pointed out that actually around that time, the time of Sancheirah, was when that concept started to break down among the Goyim. Because look, you know, if you're being ruled over by an empire whose capital is 1,000 miles away from you, then what logic does it say? Is there any more to say that your particular land or your particular city has its god anymore? So that began the process of breaking down that aspect of Avodah Zarah. Anyway, they figured we're in the land of the Jewish God now. We have to follow his rules. So they have somebody brought there to teach them about Yiddishkeit, but nevertheless, the Torah, the Pasuk describes how they continued worshipping their Avodah Zarah as well as Lahavdil, serving Hashem. As we talked about yesterday, for Goyim, that may not be such a problem. Shittuf. The Gemara has a machlokas all over the place. Did they ever give that up? And eventually they became kosher geirim, or did they continue with that? And they were only to begin with geirei arayas geirim because of fear of the lions and never really sincere geirim. It's a machlokas throughout Shas. Eventually, in the times of Reb Meir, they found that they're worshipping an image of a dove and they declared them out and out Oved Avodah Zarah. To this very day, there are remnants of them in Eretz Yisrael. You go to Shem, you can visit, you can visit. They have a complex of theirs there. Where they have interesting artifacts and things that they show. They have a community of them elsewhere in Eretz Yisrael as well. Anyway, so the Pasuk describes how these people were making their various getchkes that they were familiar with from their home countries. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. So like this, the Pasuk describes how the people of each city had their own getchke. So we're gonna quote them one by one from the Pasuk, and we're gonna explain what the image actually was. So the Anshei Bavel also a Sukkos Benois. So first of all, the people of Bavel who had been brought there to Eretz Yisrael, the land of the Ten Shvatim, they made their Avodah Zarah Sukkos Benois. Or my Nihu, what is Sukkos Benois? Tanagolos is a hen. So Sukkos Benois would be Sukkos would represent the hen, and Benois would represent the chicks or the eggs that it's hovering over and incubating. Maharsha points out, Maharsha brings from Radak on the Pasuk that actually, you know, we have in every day in davening, Hanoisim Masech Vivina. So there, fine, Sechvi means the male, the rooster, but still, therefore, Sukkos, though it's spelled with a Samach, can represent the female, so the hen. Does the Gemara literally mean that these were actually images that literally, for example, they're worshipping an image of a hen with its chicks in the same way all the others? Maybe. Or maybe the Gemara is using this as an example of what we learned yesterday, like Tzenusa David Izara, making fun of Avodah Zarah. Anyway, the Anshei Chusa also as Neugal. The Pasuk continues that the people of Chusa, which is what the whole nation eventually became called, the Chusim after them, they made their idol Neugal, or my new Tarnagol. What is that? Neugal is related to the word Tarnagol, so it means rooster. There's Yerushalmi, actually, in Masechta Avodah Zarah, that brings this Pasuk also and darshens it in a similar vein. There it has different explanations of some of them. Sukkos Benois, it says the same thing, means the hen with its chicks. But Neugal, it relates to the word regel, so it says it means the foot of Yaakov and the foot of Yosef. We find that both Yaakov and Yosef, when they were by Goyesha, when they were working for Goyesha employers, Lavan and Potiphar, respectively, then the household was blessed because of them. So now these people made in token of that an image of a foot of Yaakov, representing a foot of Yaakov and a foot of Yosef to represent the bracha that they figured they would get through that. Next, Va'anshei Chamos also was Ashima. The people of Chamos who had been brought there made an idol called Ashima. Omainiu Barcha Karcha. Namely, that is a bald goat. So the idea is a goat is called bald because it doesn't have wool like a sheep. So either the word Ashima is related to the word Shomim, which means desolate, so like a desolate of wool, unlike a sheep, or the Yerushalmi, when it brings it, says that it's actually a ram, and it goes, yeah, we find that a ram is often brought as a korban Oshom, so Oshom related to Ashima. Next, Va'avim also is Nivchan ve'es Tartof. Next, the Avim made themselves their idols, Nivchan, or actually in the Pasuk it says Nivchan. Mausha points out that there's a, the Masorah says there's a Zion Rabsi over there. There's an extra large Zion there on the word Nivchan, and on the word Nivchaz, so apparently somebody mistook it for a lion. Anyway, so Nivchaz ves Tartak, Mumainu Kelavachamur. So Nivchaz and Tartak are an image of a dog and a donkey. Nivchaz is related to the word Novach, which means a dog's barking, and it's made up of the words Novach and Chaz, because when a dog barks, Chaz, you can see its teeth, it bears its teeth. So Nivchaz, therefore, represents the dog, and Tartak represents the donkey. The Marsha and then the other Mephoshim over here don't explain why. Rabbi Yaakov Emden explains that Tartak stands for Shrei Tiki, which means two saddlebags, which is when you load up on a donkey, you put your merchandise in two saddlebags on the two sides, so it's nicely evenly balanced, otherwise it's too hard for the animal. So Tartak stands for Shrei Tiki. Next, the pasuk continues, Vasfarvim, the people from Svarvayim, which was the name of a city, Surfmas Bnei and Vespinei Seim Ba'esh, they would burn their sons and their daughters in fire. The pasuk doesn't actually say Vespinei Seim, Ba'esh in fire, La Adramelech Fa Anamelech Alekei Svarvayim, to Adramelech and Anamelech, the gods of Svarvayim. We're going to talk about soon now, but it's out of Moloch. So this was actually the Gemara explains that Moloch didn't involve bruning the child, although the Mephoshim will explain that it did. But here we're talking about another Avodah that actually involved bruning their children. So what is Adramelech Anamelech? Well, mind you, a pered v'hasus. They are an image of a mule and a horse. So why do they have those names? Adramelech is so called the Adar Leilamori B'Te'ina. Adramelech stands for Adar, which means that he honors his melech, his king, meaning his master, B'Te'ina, by carrying his burdens. A mule is a good beast of burden. The Anamelech, another explanation of Adar, is it's related to the word Dodo, which Aramaic means to carry. So Adramelech, it carries burdens for its master. You don't usually ride a mule, by the way. You usually use it like a donkey or a mule for carrying your packages and your merchandise and whatnot. But Anamelech is so called the Onile, is a horse, the Onile, the Mori, the Krava, because he answers and is responsive to its master in battle. A horse is used for battle. You don't use it, they didn't use it in those times for some riding around or carrying packages or whatever. It was mainly meant as an animal for war. So it answers and is responsive to its master, to its rider in war, and therefore it's called Anamelech. The Yerushalmi, when it brings it, says instead that Adramelech and Anamelech are a peacock and a pheasant. So different kinds of so whatever the case, they're different kinds of farm animals or game animals and whatnot. And the Gemara continues. We're talking about these people of Sarvayim who would burn their.
Maybe you want to open up for them.
And you're gonna have to unlock it first, number. So we're saying these Svavayim, these goyim from Svavayim, would burn their children in fire. So Af Chizkiya Melech Yehuda Bikish Ovev Lasis Lokein. Chizkiya Melech Yehuda, his father Ochaz, was a notorious Rosha. We talked about him briefly earlier, that when he died, Chizkiya had him dragged around on a bed of ropes, that everybody should learn not to act like him again as a kapara for him. And we're going to have more about him later on in Perek Chelek. So he worshipped all kinds of Avodah Zarah. He also wanted to do the same thing to his son Chizkiya, to have him go through the fire. Elosh Sachata Ime Salamandra, but Chizkiya's mother, whose name was Abi Bas Sacharya, the pasuk calls her, she smeared Chizkiya with salamandra blood. A salamandra, and it's like the word salamander in English, but it's a special kind of creature, as mentioned in Masechta Chulin, that you have a fire burning for 7 years straight. In some places it says specifically a fire made of hadas branches, and then out of it will come the salamandra, and because it's born from the fire, it provides immunity to fire. And therefore, if a person is smeared with its blood, he'll be fireproof. So therefore, Chizkiya's mother knew that her husband is planning to do that, so she had advanced smeared him with this stuff. Now again, does that mean literally that he was planning to burn him? I mean, you know, we talk about that he worshipped Moloch, but the Gemara talks about later on that Moloch didn't necessarily involve burning the child, just having him pass through two fires. So it might mean that he was doing Moloch, and he's also doing the Sefer Dezara of Svavayim that involved actually burning the kid. So one point is, how do we know specifically that it was Chizkiyo? The Pasuk says, Rashi says, b'noi heber ba'esh, that Ochaz also made his son pass through the fire. Now, Rashi points out, we don't find any other son of Ochaz's other than Chizkiyo. Now, Ben Yehoyada points out, actually, we do. We actually find a Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim that tells about a battle that took place in Ochaz's times, where he was being fought against by the Aseres HaShvatim and by the kingdom of Aram, and was very badly beaten. And the Pasuk mentions that there was a Maaseyohu ben Amelach, Maaseyohu, that was his name, the son of the king who was killed in that battle. So we see that, Ochaz had at least one other son. Nevertheless, though, the point is that this is the only son of his that we know of that survived him. Because again, this Maaseyohu was killed during his lifetime. So therefore, Rashi can assume that if the Pasuk says that he put past his son through the fire, that would mean Chizkiyah. Then Yehoyada also talks about, the Gemara talks about later, that if a person is hever, kol zari lamoyla, could be potter, so therefore maybe that's a reason to assume that he didn't pass all his children through the fire of Moloch, then he dafka wants to anger Hashem, so he wants to do it in a way that will actually make him chayev, so therefore we can assume that it was the one particular one. So the Gemara goes on. Marashar points out in this connection the idea behind all of these getchkes that we're saying of these various kusi nations. The idea is there's three ways in which a person can be successful in life. There's chokhmah, there's power, and there's wisdom, power, and riches. So some people think that the most important thing of a person is his strength. Others say his riches. So that's why you have, in particular, with these sarvayim, where some of them are worshiping the mule, which represents strength, and others of them represents riches, actually, because even a king needs mules to be able to carry his things, and then the horse would represent gvura. So each of them represent power and might in war. So therefore, so each one of them was worshiping one of the things like that. That's why they have those two things after. The Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rab, Yoidim Hoyu Yisrael Avodas Kachavim Shein Mamamish. The Jewish people knew full well that Avodah Zarah does not have any meaningfulness to it. They knew it's meaningless. V'loy Ovdu Avodas Kachavim El Lahatalehem Arayas Befehetzi. The only reason they worshipped Avodah Zarah was to allow themselves Arayas in public. They had a Yetzahara for Arayas, so they figured, Rashi says, if we throw off the yoke of Torah, then nobody's going to be bothering us about Arayas, because the various theologies of the Goyim, of the Getchkes, and of the various Goyim in those days didn't really have that those kinds of things are a problem. Adarava, some of the worship of some of these various gods actually included Zenus. But anyway, so therefore the idea was that they're figuring as long as we're bound by the Torah, as long as we're bound by Hashem's laws, we know, as the Gemara says, that Hashem hates immorality. So therefore we don't have, then we're not going to be able to do it. So instead they figured if we take up a Vedazana, then we have license to do whatever we want as far as Arayas. So the Gemara says, Moshe Rameshashi, but Rameshashi says, I have a contradiction. A Pasuk in Yumia, he says to the Jewish people, like when they remember their children, is like it is with their Mizbechis. Like when a person misses his son, who he's been away from for a while, the same way when these people, Yumia is talking about shortly before Chor Maizushin, when they're away from their Mizbeach of Avodah Zarah for a period of time, they miss it and they feel bad about it. Rashi says, like when he thinks about him, he gives a krecht. So that means, so it sounds like, in other words, they were very deeply attached to Avodah Zarah. And the answer is, yeah, Bosa da Aviku Bey, after they got attached to Avodah Zarah, then they tackled developed feelings for it. But originally, to begin with, when they started, it wasn't because they actually believed in anything about Avodah Zarah, it's because they wanted this excuse of Arayas for Fahesia. There's something in English there, they call it cognitive dissonance, when a person has, you know, something, two things in their life that contradict one another. They want to do one thing, but they know intellectually that that's the wrong thing to do. So eventually, you know, a person can't live with that for very long. Eventually, sooner or later, they're going to start rationalizing it and finding a reason to excuse what they're doing. So that's basically what we're saying over here, that eventually they started rationalizing to themselves that, you know what, maybe there is validity to Avodah Zarah, and eventually they got so attached to it that they actually developed warm feelings for it. So the Gemara says, Toshna, we can bring another proof. In the Toshachai, in Parshas B'chokosai, there's one of the curses over there, V'nasatias pigrechem al pigre gululechem. My Marashah, by the way, mentions in this connection, we're going to have in Perek Chelet, the famous story with Menashe, and with Menashe Melech Yehuda and Ravashi, where Ravashi tells him, how do you guys get into such shkus? And he tells him, if you were in our times, you would have lifted up the skirts of your garments and run after us. So this is also Bosa Da'avikubei, after they develop a feeling for Avodah Zarah, then Menashe is telling Ravashi, if you lived in that time, you would have done the same thing. So the Gemara says Toshma in the Teruchah. It says, "Minasatias pigrechem al pigre gululechem." I will place your corpses on the corpses of your idols. So in other words, a person, the idol is going to fall down and then shatter and break, and then the person's dead body is going to fall on top of that. So what happened? Amru. So they said, "Al Yoat Sadik koyim achazer al tfuchei rov shidir shalayim." Al Yoat Novi was Yoat Sadik was going around and circulating among the people who were swollen from hunger in Yerushalayim, the people who during the siege when there was no food, so many people were starving and swollen. One time he found a little kid was swollen with hunger and lying on the garbage heap. Amalei asked him, "Eizem mishpacha? After what family are you from?" Amalei, the kid tells him, "Mishpacha plainis ani. I'm from such and such a family." Amalei, Eliyahu tells him, "Kulam neshtayim ha'osim mishpacha. Is there anybody left from that family?" Amalei lav chutz mimeni. He says, "No, there's nobody left than me." In Torah's Koyanim, in the Medrash Halacha on Vayikra, where on this pasuk where it brings this, it says that the kid says, "I'm from a family that originally numbered 3,000 people." We mean, in other words, an extended family, a clan, like, and I'm the only one left. Amalei, so the Yahu tells him, "Imanim lamedcha davashat chaybay." So now, if I teach you something with which you'll be able to live, after lamed, are you willing to learn it? Amalei hein, so he says yes. Amalei, so the Yahu tells him, "Emer b'choyim shma Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad." Amalei, the kid says, using a lashon haposik, "Has be silent. Ki loy lahazkir b'shem Hashem. We should not mention the name of Hashem. Shalolim duhu over v'imoy. My father and mother never taught me such a thing." Now, like this, you have when a kid first learns to talk, the first thing the father is supposed to teach him is Krishna and Torah Tzivalonu Moshe. And here, this kid had never been taught that by his parents, and now he's saying, "I don't want to learn such a thing now." He took out his Avodah Zarah from his pocket, his pocket size of Avodah Zarah, like we talked about yesterday. And he was kissing it and hugging it. Adchim Nivka Kreisa, until eventually his stomach split open. He died and his stomach split from hunger. The Nufla Yerosel Oretz, and then his Getchka fell on the ground. It had been holding it on top of him, so now it fell through the split. The Nufla Hualay, and then his dead body fell on it. So literally it was fulfilled, but it says that y'all put your corpses on the corpses of your idols. So again, the Machabko, Menashko, Machabko, the kid is kissing and hugging the Avodah Zarah, that shows he actually had feelings for it. And again, the same answer, Basada Aviku Bey, after they got attached to Avodah Zarah, then they started feeling that way, but it doesn't mean that to begin with, they actually got into it with that kind of feeling. So, we'll continue tomorrow. That's the Shem, very, very appropriate stuff for Shiva also the Tammuz, I guess. But we'll continue tomorrow. That's the Shem talking about another more on this topic of the Yitzhahara for Avodah Zarah they had in those days. All right, we're going to learn Mishnayos. We're going to learn Mishnayos Midas. So in the various booklets over here, you have in the older booklets, it's in the middle of the booklet. In the newer ones, it's at the end. So Masechta Midas then goes through the blueprint of the Beis Hamikdash. The Rama, the Tosfos Yom Tov brings, the point of it is that this way, where even when we build the third Beis Hamikdash, there are going to be many details, even though the layout of the third Beis Hamikdash is going to be much different than the second, but there's going to be a number of details that are the same, and therefore it's important to know the blueprint of the second Beis Hamikdash. This is the famous thing that when Hashem tells Yechezkel the whole blueprint of the third Beis Hamikdash, Haggad is basically Sabbath. He tells him, tell the Jewish people about it. And Yechezkel says, what good does it do? We're now in Golos. It's 14 years after Churban Bayis Rishon. And Hashem says, just because the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, Yehei Binyan Beisi Batel should be the whole building of my Beis Hamikdash be Batel. Go tell them to learn it. The Yishmeroi say, and they will guard it and remember it. And that will be considered as though they actually built the Beis Hamikdash. So this is why during the 3 weeks, then they never talked about the point. It's now actually 50 years ago in Tavshin Lamed Vav, I think, was when they never started talking about it, that we should be learning this during the 3 weeks. The Mishnah here in Midas, so most of Midas talks about the blueprint, but actually starts talking about the Shmiras HaMikdash, about the guard posts of the Kohenim and Leviim in the Beis HaMikdash. Teferis Yisrael points out a reason behind it. We just said that the idea of knowing about the blueprint of the Beis HaMikdash is the Yishmeru Oisei, that they should guard it. We should guard in our minds what that blueprint is like and look forward to the rebuilding of it. Therefore, very appropriately, we begin with the guarding of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah says, there were three places in the Beis HaMikdash where the Kohenim would stand guard. The Beis HaTinas, or Beis HaNitzet, or Beis HaMoikeh. So the three places are, hopefully I don't get this anywhere near anybody's eyes, but the three places where the Kohenim guarded then are in Beis HaTinas, which is over here, over Beis HaNitzet, it's over here, over Beis HaMoikeh is over here. We're going to get in more detail later on to those various buildings and gates and all. So that's three. The Alevian, the Esrim, the Achadmok, and the Levian, meanwhile, are guard, are standing guard in 21 places. By the way, it was in today's Gimel Parakim of Rambam, and all the Mephoshim over here point out, the point of the guarding is not because we're afraid anybody's going to break in. The point of the guarding is because it's honorable that a palace should have guards on it. You know, Lahavdir, you go to Buckingham Palace, you go to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, whatever, they have a guard there all the time, they have guards there all the time, the Beis Mikdash should be no less. It's Machloikas among the Mephoshim, by the way, whether it was only by day, or whether it was only by night, or also by day. A practical thing is also, you haven't spoken in Parshas Korach, tell us it's also their job to tell people not to go where they're supposed to. So that's another function of theirs. So the Alevim, the Esrim, the Echadmak, and the Levim are standing guard in 21 places. The Gemara in the Sefer Talmud learns from Pesukim that there were 24 places altogether, and it learns from Pesukim how we know that there were 3 and 21. I'll pick a baller of Levi Yitzchak that his father has a long explanation of it, where he explains that the Shem Adonai has 24 different combinations of its letters, 24 different ways you can rearrange the letters of Shem Adonai, and Adonai represents Malchus, and the Beis Mikdash is the seat of Hashem's Malchus in the world, and therefore 24, and he breaks down why it is 3 for the Levim and 21 for the Kohanim. He has many interesting explanations of different things that we'll have throughout our Masechet. So the Alevim, the Esrim, the Echadmakim, the Levim stand guard in 21 places. The first five are by the five gates of the Harabayis, which we're going to learn about them in Mishnah Gimel. Now, this diagram that we have put up on the wall over here does not show the Harabayis, because the Harabayis is a lot larger than the Azorah and the Ezras Noshim, and if they wanted to show the Harabayis as well, then the whole thing that we want to show over here would shrink. But as we're going to see later on, the Harabayis was 500 by 500 amos, and this complex that we look at over here, the Azorah, was in it, although not centered in it, and the Harabayis had five gates. Nowadays, we have the coastal that we go and daven by is one of those, according to most Rabbanim, is the wall of the Harabayis. The Radvaz actually says it's the wall of the Azorah, but most other posts come after him say it's the wall of the Harabayis. So we'll learn in Mishnah Gimel about its gates. Here you have on the Parashas, actually, you have over here a schematic of it. You have this outer wall over here is meant to represent the wall of the Harabayis, although, again, it's not to scale. So you have five gates in there, so the Levium would stand guard by those five gates. Our Baal, Arba Pinos of Mitocha, and then four more. By the way, the Rambam says we don't just mean individual guards. Each one would be a group of guards. So there'd be a group of three groups of Kohen, in the three places that we mentioned, and 21 groups of Levium in the different places. What do you want to ask? So the actual, the Harabayis as we see it nowadays is more than 500 by 500. First of all, it's a rectangle. It's not even a rectangle. It's a trapezoid, whatever. It's not an exact square. The general understanding is that Hurdus enlarged it when he rebuilt the second Beis Hamikdash, we're talking about the original area would have been 500 by 500. Hurdus was not considered a melech lahalacha, and in any case, in his times, they didn't have the Urim B'Tumim. You have a whole thing that Amram describes in Hilchas Beis Abchira. It was in yesterday's three Parakim of Rambam, a whole procedure that you need to do in order to officially enlarge the Harabayis and make the Kaddish have the Kedusha of the Harabayis. You need the Urim B'Tumim, you need a Novi, you need a Melech, etc. They didn't have all that in Hurdus' times. So the idea would be that there was an area 500 by 500 that was the original Harabayis, and then you have extensions to it that Hurdus built. That's the general understanding. Where the 500 by 500 was within the present day walls, nobody's sure, which is why we, as a practical matter, or according to the vast majority of posts, we can't go anywhere into the Harabayis, because you never know, we might be going into an area that's also to us. Anyway, continuing the Mishnah. So again, you have four groups of Levim out of four inner corners of the Harabayis. Then you have five standing guard by five of the gates of the Azorah. Now you look on the diagram over here, you can see that there's a lot more than five gates. You have four on this side, four on this side, a couple on this side, a couple on this side. Altogether, later on, we're going to have at the end of Perek Beis an opinion that you have 13 gates in the Azorah. And there's another opinion that it's seven. So it's not a machlokas b'mitzius, but what it means is there's only five gates that are considered important and significant enough that Levium should be guarding by them. So five by them. Arbal, Arapin, Samba, Bachutz, and then you have four groups of Levium that are standing guard by the four outer corners of the Azorah. Now, the din is you're not allowed to sit in the Azorah unless you're Melech from Beis David. So therefore, for the sake of the Levium, so they don't have to stand the whole time, they didn't have them stand on the inner corner over here, because they didn't have to stand the whole time. Instead, they'd stand out here so that way they could sit when they got tired. And the same thing with the other corners. So far that's 18, 5, 4, 5, and 4. Then you have three more. The Echad, the Lishkas HaKorban. One of them, they would stand guard in the Lishkas HaKorban, which is this over here. It's one of the smaller, we're going to learn later on that the Beis HaMikdash had four smaller rooms in it, and one of them is called Lishkas HaKorban or Lishkas HaTloim. The Echad, the Lishkas HaPoreiches. Another one was in the Lishkas HaPoreiches, in the chamber of the Poreiches. I'm not sure if they know for sure where that is, although one possibility is you have a chamber over here mentioned later in the Masechta called Lishkas Pinchas HaMalbish, where they stored the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. Maybe they also wove and stored the Parochas over there. And then the third one would be behind the Beis HaKaparis, behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim over here, there would be a group of Levim standing guard. So those are the 21 places. Mishnah Beis continues, Ish HaRabayis, so Yimachazer, or Mishmo Mishmo. The Ish HaRabayis, Ish, a lot of times when we say Ish something, means a prominent person. When we have in Pirkei Avos, for example, Yosef ben Yechon, Ish Tzreda, Yosef ben Yechon, Ish Yerushalayim, etc., it doesn't mean that they happen to be from Tzreda and they happen to be from Yerushalayim. It means the prominent citizen of Tzreda and the prominent citizen of Yerushalayim. The same way Ish HaRabayis over here means the prominent person, the official of the HaRabayis. He would circulate around among all the mishmaris, among all these groups that are of watchmen, and there would be torches lit in front of him. They would be carrying torches in front of him like you do in front of an important person. So in particular, he would go around at night. So again, we have the machloikas, whether maybe they were guarding by day as well, but since, as we were going to say, he had to check whether they were sleeping, he doesn't have to check for that so much by day, so he has to just check by night. So therefore, they'd have torches lighting the way for him. Any mishma that doesn't stand up, then the Ish HaRabayis would say to him, Shalom Alecha, like to startle him, like to wake him up. Shalom Alecha, peace on you, to greet him. Is the guy going to respond? Or another way of teaching it, the Tiferes Yisrael explains, you could also teach it, V'chol Mishma Sheina Oymed, Oymer Loi, Ish HaRabayis, Shalom Alecha, that if the Mishma does not stand up and does not say, Ish HaRabayis, Shalom Alecha, then we would know that he's sleeping. Anyway, Nikashur Yoshin, so then the Han Ish HaRabayis would realize that he's sleeping. The point is, in other words, if he didn't, the fact that he's sitting doesn't mean anything necessarily. He might be tired and sitting down for a couple of minutes. He might even be lost in thought or something. But now, if the guy says, Shalom Alecha, and he doesn't respond, then Nikashur Yoshin, then you can tell he's sleeping. So now this Ish HaRabayis would beat him with a stick. Because he's being disrespectful to the Beis Mikdash, sleeping on the job. And he even had permission to burn the guy's clothing if it came to that, because you have the concept of hefker based in hefker. So the guy's clothing, you can't say that he's causing him a hezek and should be hired to pay, because Beistin has the right to declare the guy's clothing hefker if the Ish HaRabayis saw this guy's doing this again and again. So people would say, when there was a noise in the Azara, people would say, Makur Ba'azara, what's that noise from the Azara? And Levi Loika, and this is the sound of a Levi who's getting Malkus of God of Nisrafim, and his clothes are getting burnt, Yoshan Lam Mishmore, because he's sleeping on his watch. That's the smallest person in history, by the way, the person who slept on his watch. We're saying Ben Levi, did they do that to the Koyanim as well? Some of Foshim say not. You know, you have a mitzvah by the Koyanim, the Kiddashtoi, so the Ish HaRabayis might warn him, don't sleep on the job, but he wouldn't necessarily go beat him and burn his clothing, etc. No, it means Rashi's Ksusay means the outerwear, means like his coat or something, like he would be using, he'd roll up to use it like a makeshift pillow or something, so now that gets burned. Rabbi Yezman Yaakov says, the Gemara tells us, by the way, Rabbi Yezman Yaakov is the Tana of our Masechta. He's the one who composed this Masechta. He lived through the Churban and afterwards he composed it. Anyway, Rabbi Yezman Yaakov says, Pamachas Motzvah Tachi Abba Yoshin, Asachi Ima Yoshin. One time, it actually taka happened. They found my mother's brother sleeping. Now his father, of course, is a Levi. Rabbi Yezman Yaakov himself is a Levi. The Pashtus, I guess his mother was from a family of Levim as well, so her brother was also a Levi. But so forth, Ksusay, and sure enough, they burnt his clothing, showing that it's not just a hyper thing. The guy couldn't do it, but he actually did it. Again, Reb Levick has very interesting explanations over there in Teretz Levi Yitzchak about deeper ideas behind this, about the Ben Levi representing Gvura, and he's supposed to be guarding Klippus from infiltrating the Beis Mikdash, and if he doesn't, then he deserves to be beaten and his clothing burnt. And he goes in and explains in detail and why Reb Lezer ben Yaakov and why his brother and why his mother's brother, etc. It's a fascinating long explanation that Reb Levick has of much of our Masechta. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola for Shivas Batamuz. So now here learning Hilchos Beis HaBechira, then we're learning about Hilchos Beis HaBechira is indeed as great as building it. So that's we have the minhag that Rebbe gave the Sikha in Nun Aleph. This was already from the mid Lameds that it was a known thing to live during Bein HaMetzorim. We learn in Yom Beis HaBechira, and again based on that medrash that we quoted before, when Hashem showed Yechezkel the Tzoras HaBayis, He tells him, Haggad is basically Sirel's. Tell the Jewish people about the house, the Kolmum Amnei Sehem, that they should be embarrassed of their Averis. So Yechezkel says to the Eveshter to punish them. So what can they do? Leave them alone. When they come from Golos, when they come back to Eretz Yisrael, then we can tell them. And Hashem tells him, because my children are in Golos, you hate Binyan Basi Bottle. Because of that, should the building of my house be Bottle? No, Godo Kriyas of a Torah Kabinyana, learning about it in Torah, is as great as building it. And then the schar of learning about it, that they're going to occupy themselves and learn about it, Hashem says, I consider them as though we're actually involved in Binyan Abayis. And we'll continue, then the Rebbe continues, actually, then the Rebbe continues in that Sikha, that nowadays, when we're on the threshold of Gula, take of Miyad Mamash, so it really has to be that we learn it in a whole different way. Before, we could have said that we're learning because of the time of Avelos, and therefore, we feel bad, and we want to make up for the Beis HaMikdash. Now, it's more that we are looking forward to the greatness and the Maila and the Shlemus of the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi. And then also with the knowledge, it's not just Hilchus and Mashiach. It's not just something hypothetical and theoretical for the future. This is Halacha L'Maisa, the next moment that the Beis HaMikdash is already ready L'Maila and Taker from Yad. Any moment can come down. So therefore, these are actually very practical things to know right now. In addition, by the way, it's known, for example, the Chofetz Chaim, for example, pushed that people have to be learning Hilchus Kodshim. He said, what's going to happen? The Beis HaMikdash is going to come, for example, the Kohenim are not going to know the Halachos of the Avodah. So we have to kochlich in it now and work on it so that when it's tackled, when the Beis HaMikdash is built, then you're going to have Kohenim and then Levim and Yisraelim, for that matter, who know what they're doing. Alright, continuing on Hilchus Tzitzis, So we talk about dinim of buying it from Goyim, we talk about finding it, etc. So now, if you have a beggar with tzitzis, you're not allowed to sell it to a Goy. Now, what about if this Goy is a merchant and he plans to resell it? Still, you don't want him to put it on and pretend like he's a Yid. A Yid is going to think that this guy must be a Yid. He's wearing tzitzis, and then accompany him on the way, and then the Goy may kill him. Goy is choshed off shvikos domim. You have many halachas about that in Masechet Avodah Zarah and in Yerodeah about the Goyim are choshed on shvikos domim. To what extent those halachas are applicable nowadays is a whole other question. But anyway, don't be selling tzitzis to a goy. If nothing else, you don't want him to pretend and put himself forward as a yid when really he's not. We have enough trouble with the Jews for Jay who do that kind of thing. Similarly, also continues out today, but you don't give a talus or a talus cotton as a mashkin or as a pikodin to a goy unless it's just so temporarily that you don't have a concern that he's going to wear it and a yid might accompany him on the way. But otherwise you shouldn't do that.
One more minute, so.
All right, well, we can learn another halacha then, I guess. Okay, so Simon Chaf Aleph then. So what do we do with tzitzis? What do we do with tzitzis that are broken and you can't use them anymore? The tzitzis themselves are tashmishe mitzvah. So the tzitzis themselves, even the strings, don't have any intrinsic drusha of their own. We use them for a mitzvah. So in principle, after they're broken, after they're ripped off the talus, or after they're cut off the talus, in principle, you could even throw them in the garbage. While they're on the talus, then you can't use them for any mundane purpose. For example, you can't tie things to them. But after they're cut off the talus, because that would be bizri mitzvah. But after they're cut off from the talus, then the first opinion over here is that there's no problem. Because it doesn't have kedusha of its own, it's only tashmisha mitzvah. There's a difference. You have kedusha itself. You have tashmishe kedusha. You have tashmishe mitzvah. However, yesh oimrim, that even after they're cut off or broken off, you shouldn't treat them with minig bizoyin, to throw them in the garbage or someplace degraded like that. So even according to that, you could throw them someplace that's not degraded. But nevertheless, so that you don't have to put them in gniza because they don't really have any kedusha. They don't really have any kedusha. Halacha is like the first zvara, but a person who's machmir and medactic, the mitzvah is tovah ala bracha. There are balei on nefesh who are machmir to taka, put them in gniza, or to use them as bookmarks in svarim. Once they were used, we have a concept. Once they were used for one mitzvah, use them for another mitzvah. Same concept as, for example, why we save the lulav to burn with the chametz, and a number of other examples like that, where once something was used for a mitzvah, then we use it again for another mitzvah. So this is the same kind of thing.